हरे हरे, हरे राम हरे राम, राम राम हरे हरे, हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे राम हरे राम, राम राम हरे हरे, हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम हरे राम, राम राम हरे हरे, हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, राम हरे राम, राम राम हरे हरे। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद।
Rama, Rama, Rama. Rama Rama Hare Hare
Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Vihari
Hare Hare
ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ അഭയചരണാരവിന്ദ് ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത ഗോസ്വാമി മഹാരാഷ്ട്രീല പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് ജയം. നിത്യല പ്രവിഷ്ടോ വിഷ്ണുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിപദകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തര ശതശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ ഭക്തസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി മഹാരാഷ്ട്രീല പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് അനന്തകോടി വൈഷ്ണവ വൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് നാമാചാര്യ ശ്രീഹരിദാസ് ഠാക്കൂർക്ക് പ്രേം സഹോ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗര ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ രാധാകൃഷ്ണ ഗോപഗോവിനാഥ ശ്യാമകുണ്ട രാധാകുണ്ഡഗിരി ഗോവർദ്ധാനിക്ക് വൃന്ദാവൻ ധാമിക്ക് മായപ്പൂർ ധാമിക്ക് മധുരപുരി ധാമിക്ക് ജഗന്നാഥ് പുരിധാമിക്ക് ദ്വാരകാപുരിധാമിക്ക് ഗംഗമായിക്ക് യമുനമായിക്ക് തുളസിദേവിക്ക് ഭക്തിദേവിക്ക് സാമവേദ ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ഗോവ പ്രേമനന്ദി. ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദി അസംബ്ലി ബോഡീസ്, ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദി അസംബ്ലി ബോഡീസ്, ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ദി അസംബ്ലി ബോഡീസ്, ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ്, ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ശ്രീ ശ്രീ ഗുരുവൻ ശ്രീ ഗൗരൻ, ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറിയസ് ടു ശ്രീല പ്രഭുപാദ നമോ വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണ പ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതി ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമീതി നാമിനി നമസ്തേ സരസ്വദേവം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരണേ നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യദേശധാരിണേ. ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितां येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददातिं स्वपदान्दियं वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरुं वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतम् परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपदां सहगणललितां श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च हे कृष्णकरुणासिन्धु दीनबन्धो जगल्पदे गोपेशगोपिकाकान्त राधाकान्त नमोऽस्तु ते तप्तकाञ्चनगौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वाञ्छकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधार श्रीवासादिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिबोधितां भगवतां नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रथितां पुराणमुनिनां मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीम् अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्ब त्वामनुसन्धदामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणीम् नमोऽस्तु ते व्यासविशालबुद्धे फुल्लारविन्दायत पद्मनेत्र येन त्वया भारततैलपूर्णप्रज्वालितो ज्ञानमयप्रदीपाम् प्रपन्नपारिजाताय स्तोत्रवेत्रैकबाणये ज्ञानमुद्राय कृष्णाय गीतामृतदुहे नमाम् सर्वोपनिषदो गावो दुग्धा गोपालनन्दन पार्थो वल्ससुधीर्भोक्ता दुग्धं गीतामृतं महल् वसुदेवसुदं देवं कंसचाणूरमर्दनं देवकी परमानन्दं कृष्णं वन्दे जगद्गुरुं भीष्मद्रोणतटा जयद्रथजला गान्धारनीलोत्पला शल्यग्राह्यवती कृपेण वहनि कर्णेन वेलाकुलाम् अश्वत्थामा विकर्णघोरमहरा दुर्योधनावर्तिनी सोत्तीर्ण खलु पाण्डवैरणनदी कैवर्तकेशवाम् पाराशर्यवजः सरोजममलम् गीतार्थगन्धोत्कटम् नानाख्यानगकेसरम् हरिगदा सम्बोधनाबोधितम् लोकैः सज्जनषल्पदैरहरः पेबीयमानम् मुदाम् भूया भारतमङ्गजद्भुलिमलप्रध्वंसिनश्रेयसीम् मूकम् करोति वाचालम् पङ्गम् लङ्घयदे गिरिम् यल्कृपातमहम् वन्दे परमानन्दमाधवम् य ब्रह्मा वरुणेन्द्ररुद्रमरुदस्त्वन्वन्दि दिव्यैस्तवैर्वेदैः साङ्गमदैर्क्रमोपनिषदैर्गायन्दियम् समगाः ध्यानावस्थितद्गदेन मनसा पश्यन्दियं योगिनो यस्यान्दं न विदुःसुरासुरगणैः देवाय तस्मै नमः ॐ श्रीकृष्णाय नमः श्रीमराधिकाय नमः सर्वत्र गोविन्दनाम सङ्कीर्तनं गोविन्द गोविन्द So discussing last Saturday the last verse of the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita, which is known as the Knowledge of the Absolute or the Jnana Vijnana Yoga. So, at the end of that chapter, Krishna has spoken a few things. Krishna says, Sati Bhudadi Devam Mam Sati Yajnanjaye Vidu Prayana Kale Bijamam Te Vidur Yukta Jedasa. Krishna says, one who understands Adhibhudam, Sadhibhudam, Sadhidevam. Adhibhudam, Adhidevam and Adhiyajnam. And one who leaves the body with proper understanding of his Prayana Kale Bijamavi Te Vidur Yukta Jedasa, he will reach the right destination. So, this Adhibhudam, Adhidevam and Adhiyajnam, what Krishna has spoken, requires a lot of explanation. And that is why, immediately if you read the translation, it is difficult to understand what exactly all this means, Adhibhudam, Adhidevam, Adhiyajnam. So, immediately in the next chapter, Arjuna raised a question straight away. If you look at the next chapter, you will find Arjuna Vaja. Kim dal brahmam kim adhyatmam kim karma purushottama adhibhutam cha kim proktam adhidevam kim uchyate. Arjuna says to Krishna, what does it all mean? What does it mean by adhyatmam? What does it mean by adhibhutam? What does it mean by adhidevam? And adhiyajna katham kotra dehesmin madhusudana prayana kale cha katham nyayosi niyathalpavim. And who is this adhiyajnam? And why is he called adhiyajna? And how does the yogis at the time of leaving their body knows about the absolute truth? So naturally, because Arjuna could not understand what does it all meant by these different terminologies, Adhibhudam, Adhidevam, Adhiyajnam and Adhyatmam, Arjuna immediately put these questions to Krishna in the 8th chapter in the beginning itself. Now before we proceed from here, the Bhagavad Gita is such an extensive topic to discuss. It has so many underlying technical words which requires explanation. And no matter how much we try to understand, because of the extensive commentaries written by the acharyas on these words, which in reference to what has been used in the Bhagavad Gita, we will have to go back a little bit to the verse in 8 in the earlier chapter. In the 7th chapter, if you look, Krishna has mentioned there, I think it is verse number 8, yes. Rasoham apsu kaundeya prabhasmi shashi suryayoho pranava sarva vedeshu shabdhage pavirusham nrushu. Rasoham apsu kaundeya. Krishna says that I am the taste of the water. Prabhasmi shashi suryayoho. I am the light in the sun as well as the moon. Pranava sarva vedeshu. I am the letter pranavam among all the Vedic literature. All the Vedas, I am pranavam. Shabdake paurusham rushu. I am the sound in the ether, and also paurusham rushu. Among the man, I am the ability. An ability in the man. Krishna says like this. Now, when you hear all these things, straight away you get the impression, what does it all mean? Krishna is saying this, I am the ability in man, I am the pranavam in the ether. But actually, all these things requires a lot of discussions, because if you look at the comment purport on that, Srila Prabhupada has written, right somewhere in the middle, Prabhupada says there, the impersonalist perceives the presence of the Lord in water by its taste. Prabhupada is saying that the impersonalist perceives the presence of the Lord in water by its taste. And the personalist also glorifies the Lord for his kindly supplying water to quench man's thirst. So, naturally, in all these things, there are both sides involved. And that is the way of perceiving the Supreme. Prabhupada writes there, practically speaking, there is no conflict between personalism and impersonalism. One who knows God knows that the impersonal conception and personal conception are simultaneously present in everything and that there is no contradiction. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya established his sublime doctrine Achindya Bheda and Abheda Tattvam, simultaneously one and different. So, Srila Prabhupada wanted to say this, that in studying Bhagavad Gita, these questions will naturally come up. Because there are so many things in Bhagavad Gita, which is also refers to the impersonal aspect of Krishna. And as devotees, we are not too concerned about that, because that is not our interest. Our interest is the personality, Krishna. And sometimes a devotee will also feel that it is the misfortune of those impersonalists who wants to follow that route, because there is a lack of attachment for Krishna. But Krishna is so compassionate to them also, that even if you are not feeling any attachment for me, still there is a science available for you for God realization, and that is impersonalism. So Krishna has been so kind to whether you are a personalist or an impersonalist. Both of them have been given an opportunity to come through Bhagavad Gita to advance in spiritual life. So that is the beauty of Bhagavad Gita. So if you look like this, in everywhere you will find, and particularly this forthcoming chapter, chapter 8, there is a lot of things which are explained by the impersonalists also in a different way. And it is good to understand them, because Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam both have impersonalism and personalism in all through the glorifications and the philosophy also where it is spoken. So therefore, in order to understand Bhagavad Gita and also Srimad Bhagavatam, it will be helpful if one studies in the both sides of it. So that, like Srila Prabhupada has explained here, that water is perceived by the impersonalist as the taste of the water, as the presence of Krishna. The devotee feels Krishna is so kind to give us the water to drink. So in this way, the relationship with Krishna and the devotee is different than the relationship between the impersonalist and Krishna. Impersonalist appreciates Krishna's glories in different ways from the in the whole creation. The devotee sees everything as the mercy of Krishna. So in either way, one has to remember that Krishna consciousness is there in everyone, in every living entity, whether it is personal or impersonal, but in different ways it is perceived by the personalist as well as the impersonalist. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also, while bringing forward this philosophy of Achindya Bheda Bhedam, Bhedam and Abhedam, that means Dvaitam and Advaitam, both are there in the Achindya Bheda Bheda Tattvam. In other words, in order to accommodate both, particularly this is the reason why Mahaprabhu has selected the commentary of Bhagavatam also from Sri Rajarya Swamiji. Sri Rajarya Swamiji's commentary is also like that. In several instances, Dvaitam is prominent there. Whereas in the many other instances, Advaitam is also spoken favorably by Sri Rajarya Swamiji. And Mahaprabhu accepted because that commentary complies with the Achindya Bheda Bheda Tattvam also. That Bhedam and Abhedam both are brought forward in the commentary. So because of all that, and Srimad Bhagavatam is the beautiful presentation of this, Bhedam and Abhedam both exist in Krishna. And therefore, it has been glorified by Mahaprabhu for those who wants to progress in the science of Krishna consciousness. So with this background, if we move on to the 8th chapter, you will find there, Kim Brahma, Kim Arjuna Vajam. Arjuna is saying that this Kim Dal Brahma, Kim Adhyalpam, Kim Karma, Purushottama, Adibodhanja, Kim Prokta, Adidevam, Kim Uchade. Arjuna wanted to know all these things. Adhyalpam, Adibodham, Adidevam, and also Adiyatyam. And all these things Arjuna wanted to know. But before we go into that, let's try to understand what this 8th chapter is about. The 8th chapter is, Prabhupada has given the title in English as Attaining the Supreme. Attaining the Supreme. So in other words, this is something that takes a person close to the Absolute Truth, close to Krishna. So in the original Bhagavad Gita you will find, this verse is titled as Akshara Brahma Yogam. That is how it is titled, Akshara Brahma. So Akshara Brahma means that Akshara Brahma generally refers to the letter Om. Or in other words, the process of realizing Krishna through the letter Om. And they have given different names for it. Om means Omkara Upasana. Upasana means serving the letter Om and through the worship of Om, realizing Krishna. So, in another instance you will notice, Krishna says, in the same verse it's mentioned, Pranava Sarva Vedeshu. Out of all the Vedas, I am Pranavam. Pranavam means this Omkaram, the letter Om. It is also called as Pranavam. It is also called as Tarakam. And it is also, it is the same as the letter Om. Pranava Sarva Vedeshu, Krishna says. And because the importance of Om in the Vedic literature is so high, that it is also necessary to know why Om is so important in the Vedic literature. The letter Om generally signifies the three letters A, O and Ma. That is, when you combine this A, O and Ma, that becomes Om. So when you pronounce this letter Om, actually the mouth pronounces these three letters as well, A, O and Ma. And in later on you will find in the, I think it is in the 10th chapter, while discussing the glories of the different vibhuris or opulences of the Absolute, Krishna says there, Aksharanam Agarosmi. I am the letter A in all the letters, Krishna says. Now, why is these things so important? You may wonder why it is mentioned that the letter Om and the letter A, they are so important as far as Krishna is concerned. There is a strong reasons to substantiate all these things. It is not that it has been spoken very lightly and we take it in that way. No, it is not like that. The whole Vedic philosophy begins from Krishna. Everything is origin is Krishna. Now, to come back to that, we will have to little bit understand the modern scientific way of thinking also. Because there are many instances when science supports Vedic philosophy, and this is one of them. Just like, it is not that everything in the science is also bad. Sometimes we criticize scientists too much, saying that everything they have done is damage to the world. No, they are also trying to progress, but the only problem with this is that sometimes they agree with us, sometimes they don't agree with us. So this is one instance where they have some agreement with us. The agreement is this, that how does the creation started? How did the creation start first? Now, Vedic literature are telling us from time immemorial that the creation has begun from sound. Sound is the origin, and from sound creation has come. It is a known factor in the Vedas, Upanishads, everywhere this is stated, that sound is the origin. From sound it has come. After many, many years of research, the scientists have also agreed that there must be something to do with the sound. And that is why they brought this theory of, what's it called? Big Bang Theory. You know. So this has come from that concept. But originally, the concept of the sound has been existing from time immemorial. And all through the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find how much importance Bhagavatam has given to the sound vibrations. Sound vibration. So from vibration, sound has come. Shastra says like to us like that. So from vibration, sound has come. So if there has to be any sound, there has to have some vibration as well. Isn't it? So because of vibration only, the sound has been created. That is the Vedic conception. So talking about this vibration and sound, the whole Vedic philosophy is centered around that. And that is where the letter Om also comes in. Pranava Sarva Vedeshu. Krishna says, I am the letter Om in among all the Vedic mantras, in other words. Tum hi brahmaiva sakshal paramuru magaran aksharanamakarastaro mandreshu rajyam manurasi munishu tum bhagar naradovi. Krishna says like that. Tum hi brahmaiva sakshal paramuru agaram aksharanam akarasaro mandreshu. Among the letters, aksharanam akaram. Among letters, I am A, Krishna says. Taro mandreshu rajyam. Among the mantra, I am Tarakam. That means pranavam or om. So why did Krishna says like, Krishna says here in Bhagavad Gita and later on in the Ekadashi Skandam also, Krishna talks about the glories of the letter om. Now the reason for that, all they say is, that, as I mentioned before, this letter Om has three components. Actually, it has four components. When you pronounce this letter Pranavam Om, you will see when you say Om, at the end, a sound comes from there. That is known as Nadam. Nadam means the continuity of the letter Om. So, A, U, Ma, and later on the Nadam, or the continuous flow of the sound after that. All these things. Like that, the letter Om has four components in that. That that is the four different parts of the letter Om. Now, out of that, the letter A is the one which begins the Om with. Why is letter A so important? I don't know whether you have heard these things about the letter A. Letter A, in Sanskrit language, A is the letter which is the most important letter. You can see, for example, there is two things called swaram and vyanjanam. A, A, E, E, U, U, they are called swarams. And ka, ka, gan, ga, nga, cha, cha, jan, jan, ya, so and so forth, everybody knows. All of them are called vyanjanam. Now, if you want to pronounce any vyanjanam letters, say for example, ka, ga, ga, nga, nga, cha, cha, ja, nja, nya, it requires one swaram attached to that, and that swaram is a, isn't it? If you say ka, a comes there, ka, a comes there, ga, a comes there. Every single vyanjanam, ka, ka, ga, nga, nga, cha, cha, jan, jan, nya, tata dantana, tata dantana, papa bambama, ya ra la va sha sha sa ha. Everything you take, any letter in the Sanskrit vocabulary or the alphabets, everything needs this letter A attached to the vyanjanam. Otherwise, it's not complete. So, that is one of the important things of this letter A. Even this is because it is in Sanskrit like that. And all the other languages has come in due course from Sanskrit. And they have developed into different forms, that's all. But the original language of this whole world is accepted by the linguists that Sanskrit is the origin of all the languages. And from Sanskrit alphabet, therefore they are the most ancient language and also the most ancient alphabets. And from there, everything else has originated. Even if you take many other European languages also, the letter A is spoken as A. In English it is spoken as A, but in German it is spoken as A. So this letter A is such an important letter. In other words, in addition to that, when the children are brought to Gurukulam first time, and before they start writing, the first time when they are trained to write letters, the first letter, the teacher holds the child's hand and train him to write the letter A. First, that is the letter he is taught to write. That was always been the system for very, very thousands of years. This has been the system that's been followed in the Gurukulam. That the first letter that the child is taught to write, first time when he starts writing, the spiritual master blesses the disciple to take to the learning process. And learning process is given a lot of importance at that time because the education in that time meant for advancing in spiritual life, not for getting a job. So because it was like that, there had a lot of reverence to that process of educating your children. And the spiritual master took special care and followed a certain process, and the letter A was given to him as the beginning of the education process. Nowadays that's all gone. Nowadays first thing what they say to the child is how to make a circle, first thing. And as soon as he makes a circle, it means that your rest of the life you will be running around in circles. That's also the beginning of modern education. That this is unfortunate thing. Today the thing is being developed in such an advanced stage that they are saying that we are teaching the child easily to make it easier for him. But the Shastric point is that you don't have to make everything easy for him. Once he is 5 years, he is supposed to learn certain things. If you keep making everything easier for him, at the end he will become useless. That's what they are saying. So therefore the letter A and the importance of A was taught to the child from the very beginning, because the letter A comes in everything. So this letter A has got this perception. Not only that, it is that letter which stays with all the vyanjanams, all the alphabets in the Sanskrit language. Apart from that, it is the first letter that's been taught to the child when he comes to Gurukulam first time. So Krishna says, Aksharanam Akarosmi. Akaram. Akaram means A. I am among the letters. Krishna says, I am A. That is why he says like this. And it is an important reason for that. Now, if you look back into the background of the creation, you will also notice another interesting things. The Vedic mantras, which are in the Rigvedam, Samavedam, Yajurvedam, Atharvavedam, and all the other great Vedic mantras, they were not written down anywhere. Krishna never wrote them down anywhere, anytime, anywhere. It is not written anywhere. Nor this Krishna handed them over to the sages, because those personalities who invented these mantras, if you take for example any mantram, say Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, it starts with the pranavam, isn't it? Om, it begins with Om. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, Om Namo Narayanaya, the first letter is Om again. So like that, almost all the mantras you will find this letter Om in the beginning. This letter Om is put in the beginning. And in addition to that also you will notice that these mantras which we have received in due course through the Vedic literature, they were actually found by the sages. The great sages have found from Krishna has offered it to them. How did they find these mantras? That is also another interesting thing. Just like when we normally say, they are called mantra drashtav. Drashtav means one who has got this mantra by Krishna's mercy. They are drashtav. Drashtav means they have found it out. How did they find it out? They found it out because these mantras do exist. They existed from time immemorial. They were always there. They were always there from time immemorial. We don't know when they were originated. They always existed. That is the conception. Like we say about Krishna. What do we say about Krishna? Krishna, we say, Krishna is anadi. Anadi means Ishvara Parama Krishna, Sachidananda Vigraha, Anadir Adir Govinda, Sarvakarana Karanam. That is how we say about Krishna. Anadi he is. Anadi means beginningless, timeless. Time conception you cannot apply for Krishna. For us, we can apply time for our body and our existence. But for Krishna, we can't apply any time conception. Conception of time doesn't exist for Krishna. Similarly, all the Vedic mantras also, there is no time conception. In other words, these Vedic mantras are referred to as Krishna's breathing. When Krishna breathes, the Vedic mantras were existing. In other words, if Krishna has been existing from time immemorial, beyond our understanding, these Vedic mantras also existed from time immemorial. That is the beauty of these Vedic mantras. All the Vedic literature, the Vedic mantras, they existed as long as Krishna has existed. Krishna did not speak at a particular time these mantras. Many people have this false conception that Krishna spoke it later. It didn't speak like that. As long as Krishna existed, these Vedic mantras also existed. That is why, if you look in the Bhagavad Gita carefully, you will find Vedescha sarveir ahameva vedyam vedanta krid veda videva chaham. Krishna says like that, Vedescha sarveir ahameva vedyam. Through all the Vedic literature, I am to be known, Krishna says. In other words, Krishna gives equal importance to the Vedic mantras as much as himself. In other words, they are inseparable. You cannot separate Krishna and Veda separately. That is, they are so closely, they are linked, in other words. So because it is like that, all the Vedic mantras that has come into existence has been existing forever. Has been existing, always it was existing. So at some point in time, the great personalities, great sages like Vasishtha, Vishwamitra and so many other great personalities, they found out a way to get these mantras. They realized it. How did they find that out? That's also, you can see from Bhagavad Gita. When you come to the 11th chapter, you will find, when Krishna wanted to see Arjuna wanted to see the universal form, Arjuna could not see the universal form on his own. He could not see it. So what did Krishna do? Krishna says to Arjuna, Divyam dadami de chakshu pashyame yogamaishwaram. I'll give you that divine eyes, then you can see me. That is what Krishna says to Arjuna. In other words, with our mundane eyes, normal eyes, we cannot see Krishna's universal form. It's very clear, isn't it? Krishna says like that to Arjuna, Divyam Dadami Dejakshu Pashyame Yogamaishwaram. My dear Arjuna, if you want to see me, here is the divine eyes for you to see it. In other words, it was a special glasses what Krishna has given to Arjuna to see him. Otherwise, Arjuna wouldn't have seen him in that way. So similarly, when it comes to the mantras also, it is like that. The sages were struggling hard. They realized that behind all these things, due to how did they get to that point? Because of the very intense austerities and penances they performed. Austerities and penances does what to the body? What it does is, it makes our mind concentration very, very high. Ekagrata, it is called. That concentration for the mind comes from austerities and penances. What did Krishna say to Brahma in the beginning, before he started creation? Tapattavedi. He says, start tapasya, there is no other way. If you want to start creation and want the power to do that, tapattavedi. He says in the Bhagavatam like that. Krishna says to Brahma like that. So, Brahma comes much later in that process. Even Brahma did not invent all these mantras. Vedic mantras existed even before Brahma. So, when it came to the question of mantra, these sages realized that they require, just like Arjuna wanted special eyes, they needed special ears. This was the difference. Arjuna had special eyes, but the sages had special ears. That's all we have to understand. So all these senses what we have has very, very limited capacity on its own. It doesn't have the capacity to absorb the divine things. Either it is sound or touch or smell or anything in relationship with Krishna, absolute truth, it's very difficult to perceive with these senses. Unless one has gone beyond a certain stage of realization. So, here what happened was, the sages, due to their intense austerities and penances, they developed the ability to capture these sound vibrations of the Vedic mantras. And that is how they were known by different sages. For example, there are many mantras which were spoken by Vishwamitra. There are many spoken by Vasishtha. Similarly, Vedavyas and so many others, many, many great personalities, they all have their own contributions to these mantras in the Vedas. So that is how Vedas came to manifest in this world. And because it is like that, it is the sound vibration of this mantra that matters, that because of that, simply writing down doesn't help. This is the reason why in the early days, writing was not considered important. This writing business started only not long ago, when we became totally useless, that we can't do anymore, remember anything. Then, now we are thinking that, oh, everything in the hard disk is great. We think like that, isn't it? But in the olden days, they thought if you had to put it in writing, that means you are useless, that you can't remember anything. This is the how the degradation has come in the human body, that we can't remember anymore anything. Even what is spoken and 5 minutes ago, you forget after 10 minutes, you've forgotten about that. But this is today's strength of mind and the concentration what we have. We have lost everything. So therefore, all this memory, the higher the memory, the computer, it also becomes better. Because we cannot remember anything. That is why. So Krishna says, in relationship with this, what you have to remember is, that these sages had such intense austerities and penances they have performed, and they acquired the capacity to capture all these mantras from the air, from the sound they got it. From the sound they got it. So, how did that come from the sound? The vibrations in the sound were these mantras. That is why creation comes from vibration, we say. Creation has come from the sound, and sound has come from the vibration. Look at this way, for example. When we breathe today, when we breathe the air from outside, we consider that, but people will tell you that this breathing is only for the oxygen we take it, isn't it? That's our greatest conception in this world. Medical science also says it gives you the oxygen, and that's all we understand about breathing. But Shastra says, no, breathing is that vibration Krishna presents in us. As soon as you breathe, Krishna is going in, Krishna is coming out. And the moment Krishna goes in, that breathing process maintains this body going all the time. Very easy to understand. For example, if it was only oxygen, why is that when you get angry, suddenly your breathing changes? There is a relationship between your emotions. In other words, your mind is also functioning because of the breathing. Otherwise, breathing mind cannot function. That is why the fluctuation in the nature of the mind, particularly in relationship with the anger or suddenly a disappointment or some kind of fear, when you experience that, immediately your breathing pattern also changes, which clearly shows that breathing has something to do with the mind as well, not simply supplying the oxygen, isn't it? So it is a logical point to make that breathing has an influence on the mind as well. And this breathing is that vibration in us that keeps this whole system functioning. So there you can notice that. For example, great yogis, what do they do? What is this Ashtanga Yogam does? Ashtanga Yogam does only one thing. They train themselves in such a way that they can control this breathing. And once the moment you control the breathing, the flow of blood stops. If you cut their finger or anything, blood doesn't flow because the vibration has stopped. The breathing has stopped, the blood flow also has stopped. Similarly, so many bodily activities stops with that. So this is how the yogis control the bodily functions. So like this, there are so many things attached to the sound vibration which has come in the form of mantras to the body, and these great sages have taken up these mantras and they have given it to us for us to maintain them. And simply by writing them alone, it does not work, because to pronounce these mantras properly, it requires training, and that training is given by the spiritual master to the disciple during the childhood. So that is how the Vedic mantras have come into existence. So from there you can see that the relationship with the sound, why it is called the sound has such an important significance or significant position in the tradition. Because the creation begins from the sound. And the sound philosophy or the theory of the sound, effect of the sound is so powerful that they have developed the science that through the sound process we can realize the absolute truth. And that is known as pranavopasana. Pranavopasana is nothing but through this letter Om, which represents the absolute truth. Krishna says that pranava sarva vedeshu. Pranavam is the letter that represents me in all the Vedic literature, Krishna says. So because pranavam is a letter, that is a mantram for those who wants to realize the absolute truth or the impersonal concept. This is one process available for them. But what is the difficulty? Difficulty is that this pranavopasana is not easy. So many other things, like Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, klesho adhikatarastesham, it's all very, very, very difficult. But it is absolutely pointless to try these processes, because our situation in Kali Yuga is so difficult that there are so many qualifications needed to come to this pranavam, pranavopasana or omkara upasana. They also call it. Some people say that if they simply chant Om, that they will become perfect. There are many people who chant this mantra Om and find happiness in that. There is no doubt, there is a process beyond that. Now, when we chant the letter Om, as I mentioned before, there are four different sections attached to that. But also the other thing what you have to remember is this, that while chanting this pranavam, or the pranava sarva vedeshu, that every mantram what has been written down, there is what is known as bijaksharam. Bijaksharam is important thing. This bijaksharam actually is written by the sage. This is the bijaksharam. Through that aksharam you can realize this mantra. That is how it is spoken. Say for example, klim, krishnaya, govindaya, gopijana vallabhaya, that klim is the bijaksharam there. So this bijaksharam has an important position. So when you study this bijaksharam, that upasana of that bijaksharam, that is important. Through that you realize the power of the mantra, or mantra siddhi, or perfection of mantra comes from that. Now, when we when we study all this mantra and practice it, particularly this omkara upasana, or through the process of Om, you are trying to realize, the first and foremost thing required is a very, very, very high degree of renunciation in this world. So, there itself we have failed, isn't it? We don't have to further talk about it. That realization that is required for omkara upasana is so high that it is not possible for ordinary people to practice it. people like us who are neither here nor there, we are still not decided whether to come to spiritual life or not. This is our position. Whereas Ongaru Vasana is for those people who have already got that kind of detachment and annunciation from this world. If you look at, I think it is in the Mandukya Upanishad, which talks about this Ongara Upasana in detail. It is mentioned in very much in detail in Mandukya Upanishad. There it is spoken a lot about it, the whole process. Now, when you come to this understanding of Ongaram, what you have to remember is that Kim Arjuna Vaja, Arjuna says here, Kim Dal Brahma Kim Adhyatmam, Kim Karma Purushottama, Kim Adibhudanja Kim Proktam, Adidevam Kim Uchyadeyam, Adiyatnyakatham Kotra Dehesmin Madhusudana Prayana Kaleja Katham, Nyayosi Nyadalmabhim. Then, this letter Om represents the whole creation according to Krishna. According to Krishna, it represents the whole creation. Now, why this letter Om has so much significance, even in the deity worship, you will find Om has a lot of significance. Generally, the process of deity worship is known as Tandriyavidhi. Tandriyavidhi is the process. What we follow in our temples is Panjaratriyavidhi. Panjaratriyavidhi is the process of Bhakti process. Bhakti process means where Bhakti has been given the highest importance, more than anything else. There's not so much concern about the rules and regulations, but bhakti has been given the highest importance. Now, Sri Narada Maharshi compiled Panjaratriyavidhi for the sake of the devotees. So Panjaratriyavidhi is what is followed. But in the ancient temples in India, where they have followed the Vedic tradition, it is not Panjaratriyavidhi they have always followed. They followed what is known as Vaidhikavidhi or Tandriyavidhi. So Vaidhikavidhi and Tandriyavidhi. Vaidhikavidhi means the process that is based on mantra. Tandriyavidhi means the process that is based on tantra. So everything has its own technical side and all has its own positive and negative side as well. Now, when Tandriyavidhi was followed, you will notice there that generally the pujari, for example, in a temple, a brahmana who was worshipping the deity, he has been worshipping for years. And he is following the Tandriyavidhi. For example, he was following the Tandriyavidhi. When he worships the deity, he knows what is the Mula Mantram. The Mula Mantram, what is the relationship with that particular deity? What is the Dhyanam? What form one has to meditate that deity while performing the deity worship? And then Pidha Puja, where the deity is situated, the worship of the seat of the deity. Pada Puja, the lotus feet of the deity. Like this, there are different stages of worship in the deity worship process. There is so many things. So, what normally happens is, suppose a brahmana who is doing this deity worship, he knows all the associated rules and regulations with the Tandriyavidhi. Suppose one day he fell sick, he couldn't do it. Then what to do? So, now sometime in the olden days, they were very particular that the pujari stayed at the temple. He did not go outside. He always stayed at the temple for the reason that in order not to contaminate his mind at any time by the external influences. Because if a pujari mixes with everyone else outside very freely, naturally he would not have that concentration in his mind when he enters into the deity room, which is understandable, isn't it? Just like if your mind is going all directions, where is the question of concentration? And when you go into the deity room, and if you are still thinking about all other problems at home or at work, then that kind of deity worship will not be very effective, would it? It will be like that. Krishna will also stand and watching us, what we are coming with. So, in order to make that deity worship process effective, it is necessary that a very high degree of discipline in the life of the pujaris also. Otherwise, it will just go on like this. And that discipline is generally done by restricting the movement of the pujari outside the temple. He generally lives in the temple all the time. And by that way, he does not being influenced by the lower modes of material nature outside. We have spoken this before, that manigedam tu nirgunam. Krishna's temple is above the three modes of nature. So if you live in the temple, you are supposed to be above the three modes of nature. Although not necessarily always happening. Because if it is properly managed and done, Mannigayadam Dunargunam, Krishna says, my temple is above the three modes of nature. So the pujari also has to think that in order to maintain the proper consciousness or right consciousness while going into the deity room for the service, not to maintain that, he has to restrict himself or discipline himself, not being influenced by the lower modes of nature. So he generally stays there. But say for example, somehow it can happen in spite of all of this, sometime he can fall sick, isn't it? He can fall sick. And there is no one else to help. A situation has happened like that. Because at one time, there were thousands and thousands of temples all over India where deity worship was performed very rigorously, very seriously. And they were not making any concessions on that. They were very rigid about that. So when such a worship is going on, and then suddenly there was a problem at the temple that Pujari could not perform after several years of worship, and sometimes any sickness happens, something happened, he couldn't get up, he couldn't do it. What do you do at that time? So system at that time was, suppose another Brahmana came that way. Brahmanas come. But when he came, the devotees at the temple asked him, can you carry out the worship of the deity? Because you can't stop the worship. Once you start the worship, you have to continue under any circumstances. That is why opening a temple is easy, but maintaining is more difficult. It is not something like a business. We can open and close it as and when we like it. Deity worship is not like that. It is a high degree of responsibility. When one starts deity worship, one has to be properly very sure that he'll be able to continue that deity worship process without any interruption. So here, the another Brahmana has come, and when he came, the people asked him if he could do the deity worship. The Brahmana says, I do not know what is the deity's, the dhyanam, the meditation. How do we meditate? And what is the Mula Mantram? I do not know. He says like this. So what do you do in that situation? In that situation, Shastras are saying, if he has chanted this letter Om from his Gayatri times, and if he has made sufficient realization from Om, he can perform the deity worship. So there, that concession is given. Om, if one has perfected in Om, he is capable of, or he is still able, using that letter Om alone, he can perform the deity worship in the Tantrika Vidhi to the deity, whichever way it is to be done. So like this, Om has a significance. But most of the people will not understand the importance of Om. For example, say somebody was, it is like this, Somebody is ploughing the land, a farmer is ploughing the land in the field. While he was ploughing, he got a diamond from the field. He got a diamond from the field. And when he got the diamond, he looked at it, he thought it is nice to look at, but he didn't know any value of it. He didn't know what the value of the diamond is. He left it on the side of the field. By chance, a diamond merchant came that way. A businessman, he came that way. He saw the diamond there, lying there. So he asked the farmer, would you give that to me? I'll give you whatever is necessary, he said. The businessman or the diamond merchant told the farmer. The farmer, because he didn't know the value of the diamond, he says to the diamond merchant, no, you can take it if you want, I don't need it, he says. So the diamond merchant takes it because he knows the value of the diamond, whereas the farmer doesn't know that. So because he did not know, similarly, the letter Om is also like that. That when you know the value of this letter and how, and only then the value of every letter is in that way, Akaram also, the sages knew these things. And that is why they know the value of letters. For us, we don't know anything. What do we know about the value of any letter for that matter? If somebody tells you whether it's A or B or C or D, we just take it, it's all the same, what does it matter? We have to know, someone get the message through. That's how much we know about it. But the sages who knew the power of the letters, particularly Akaram and Omkaram, through the help of these letters alone, they have developed a process of self-realization or the realizing the absolute truth. And that is known as Omkara Upasana or Pranava Upasana. It's called in different names, Pranava Upasana, Omkara Upasana. That particular process is discussed in this chapter, 8th chapter, which comes little later. Before we go to that, So Krishna says here, Kim dal brahma kim adhyalpam kim karma purushottama adibhutanja kim prokta adidevam kim uchyate adiyajnagadam kotra dehesmin madhusudana prayana kale jagadam yosi nedatmabhi What does this adhibhutam, adhidevam, adhiyajnam all means? What it means is, now, like this. As I mentioned, the letter Om has four parts. A, O, Ma, and then the nadam, or the sound that follows that, isn't it? Those four things are the four different parts of the letter Om. Then, if you take the five material elements, earth, water, air, ether and fire, and what are the qualities of this? Earth has got a quality, what is that? Smell, isn't it? Gandham. Shabdam, sparsham, rupam, rasam, gandham. Five. These are called the tanmatras. Tanmatras means the qualities of these different gross material elements. The quality of earth is smell. And the quality of the sky is the sound. Isn't it? Sparsham. Shabdam. Shabdam is the quality of the sky. Similarly, the quality of the air is touch. To touch. Touching. That capacity the vayu or air has got. Similarly, the fire has got the quality as the form, rupam. And the water has the quality as rasam or the taste. So, sound, touch, form, smell, and shabdam, sparsham, rupam, rasam, and gandham. These five things associated with the five material elements. Five material elements. Now, if you make a column of all the tanmatras, five tanmatra, sound, touch, smell, form, and smell, shabdam, sparsham, rupam, rasam, and gandham, one column. Earth, water, air, ether, and fire, another column. And then another column, if you make the predominating deities in all these things. For example, if you look at it this way, that the dominating deity for the earth, which is mentioned here as Bhumi, is Brahma. Lord Brahma is a predominating deity. Similarly, for the water, it is Vishnu. For the fire, it is Lord Shiva. And for the air, it is Sadashiva. And for the sky, it is Ishvara. So, if you make these three columns, one the tanmatras and the five material elements and then the predominating deities, you can say like this, that the smell of that particular material element of earth, say for example if you take earth, the smell is gandham, or the gandham or the smell is the tanmatra, and that is called as the adhyalpam. And then the bhumi, which is known as the adhibhutam, and the predominating deity is adhideva. So that is how five material elements, five tanmatras and five predominating deities. They are called the adhyalpam, adhibhutam and adhidevam. So that is how these three categories are mentioned. And they will all come in the creation. Because if you look at the creation, it will say, from Mula Prakriti, when material nature was created, from in there Krishna entered into that. In the Bhagavatam you will see all these things. It's not mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. In the Bhagavatam it is mentioned. From Mula Prakriti means the original material nature. In material nature Krishna entered and activated that. And from there, the sound has come. And from the sound, the sky has formed. And sound has turned into, which has turned into sky, which has got the quality as the sound. So the transformation of the sound has come from the sky. That is the beginning of creation. According to the Vedic literature, it comes like that. Now, if you look these three letters, A, O, and Ma, A-O and Ma. You also have to relate that, this Omkaram, with your own body. If you look at your own body, normally, this body has got three states of existence, isn't it? Jagrat, Swapnam and Sushupti, which is known as the vacant state, the dream state and the deep sleep. Now, exactly like in the Adhyalpam, Adhibhutam, Adhidevam, Krishna is present in all these three also as Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva. In the vacant state, Brahma is the predominating deity. That means in the Jagrat. In the Swapnam state, Vishnu is predominating. And in the deep sleep, Shiva is predominating. They are present in there as predominating deities. All Krishna's representatives there. Now, these three states of existence, Jagrat, Swapnam and Sushupti, we are interacting with the world in three different ways. As you know, it is discussed before also, which is known as Stulam, Sushpam and Karanam.
Isn't it? Sthula prakriti. Sthula prakriti means the gross world. So in the vacant state or the jagrat state, you interact with the gross world. In the sushmam state or the subtle state, sthulam, sushmam and kaya, in the subtle state, you interact with the swapna state or the dream state. And in the deep sleep, what is happening is that this is known as the karana shayiram or the causal body, where you are released from both the gross body as well as the subtle body. So in all these three states of existence, jagral, swapnam, sushupti, sthulam, sushmam, karanam, and then what else? A, O and Ma, the three states of existence also. A, O and Ma, the three broken parts of the letter Om. These three things exist. So normally you will say like this, that letters Om has been broken into these three parts, as I mentioned, A, O and Ma, in order to represent this Jagral, Swapnam and Sushupti, or Sthulam, Sushmam and Karanam. Now the living entity or the spirit soul, when it enters into these three states of existence, for example, in Jagrat state, he is known by one name, which is known as Vishwan. When it goes into Sushmam or the subtle body, it is known as Tejasa. And when it goes into the causal body or the Prajna state, he is known as Prajnan. So Vishwam, Tejasan, Prajnam. And Sthulam, Sushmam, Karanam. Jagral, Swapnam, Sushupti. Like this, it's been clarified. A, O and Ma. Why? So you got three columns and three different conditions in which the living entity existing. We cannot exist outside these three. All the time we are in these three states, isn't it? Jagrat, Swapnam and Sushupti. Moving backwards and forwards. Whole day we are in Jagrat. Working, doing so many different kinds of things. In the night we collapse. And as soon as you collapse, the dream, probably most of the time the dreams comes. So the soul is in a different state of consciousness at that time. And that is known as the deep dream state. And then if you are lucky enough, you will fall into the deep sleep. And then you stay in deep sleep for some time. When you are completely out of it, the whole material world, you are neither in your gross body nor in your subtle body. You have left both of them. And you are in your deep sleep state. And suddenly somebody wake you up from there and bring you back again to the Jagrat. The next day morning, isn't it? So that's what every day we are doing the same thing, day after day after day. But we don't think about all these things too much. We think that the Jagrat state is the most important thing. And we plan our whole day in the diaries and in the all other things, you know, what we have nowadays to plan the day, they say. And they feel a great satisfaction planning the day. From 6 o'clock in the morning to 10 o'clock at night, I am busy with all other things. So feel satisfaction from that. But Krishna's diary is a little different. Krishna's diary is Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti. How many hours you spend in Jagrat and wasted your time, Krishna says. And how many hours you spend in Swapnam and dreamt all rubbish, which are also not useful. And how many hours you are sleeping like a dead body in the deep sleep. So all these three states, as far as the spiritual side is concerned, are not the ultimate goal. These three are considered to be the conditioned state of the soul, where it has to continuously move backwards and forwards. And this is what the conditioning means. The moment we get out of these three and goes beyond than that, that is what is known as Turiyam, or the state of existence where we release from the conditioned state. So once you come out of that, then you are freed from your major conditioning. And once you go into that state, you will realize it that these three states were actually controlling you. That moment you are released from that, only then you can look back and see that how these three shells around you, Jagral, Swapnam and Sushupti, Sthulam, Sushmam and Karanam, Vishwan, Tejas and Prajnam, the forms three states of existence were actually holding you under the control of material nature. But once you have escaped from these three, you are liberated. You are freed from here. So Omkara Upasana, this is what is done there. When they practice this Pranava Upasana or Omkara Upasana, what happens is, first they take this first part, the Jagrat part, where Brahma is the predominating deity, and it requires an awful lot of concentration of power and mind to identify oneself with everything what we see in this gross world. That is how the process begins. To identify with everything what we see in this gross world. And along with that, you experience also the presence of the Supreme Truth in everything in this world. In other words, that there is nothing in this world which is outside without Krishna's presence in there. That realization has to come by power of renunciation and by power of observation. One constantly develops this consciousness in oneself. And when that consciousness becomes perfect, when it is properly situated, then he goes into the second stage of the Sushpam. Sushpam means it is a little bit more subtle. On the Stulam side, it was the gross side, it was the five material elements, gross material elements. And what else? The five gross material elements, the predominating deity Brahma, and also the gross body, and you are experiencing everything in the gross world. So first you start with the gross world, and by your intense effort, you realize the gross world in such a way that you are able to relate with everything in relationship with Krishna. After you have done that, when you have become perfect in that, you can move on to the next stage, which is the second stage, or the stage called U. A, U and Ma. A was the first stage, then you come to the second stage known as U. In U, what you realize is everything that is subtle. That means the mind, the intelligence, the tanmatras, like sound, touch, smell, shabdam, sparsham, rupam, rasam, gandham, all that things. And then the predominant deity is Vishnu there. So that subtle realization starts coming. But how do you know that you have reached there? It's not that all that is written down anywhere, that you give a certificate after I finish the first one. Now you can have this certificate, you go into the second one. Nobody will give you any certificate for this. All you have to do is that when one has crossed the first stage and reached the second stage, you will realize there a completely different world, a completely different world. Tremendous amount of satisfaction and freedom from all attachment in this world. That is the symptom of the second stage, when one comes to the second stage. Similarly, when you practice that second stage, you move on to the third stage. And when you come to the third stage, more or less you are clear in your mind that you are fixed up in the final path towards liberation. So, Ongara Vasana looks very good. When you theoretically, it's all very wonderful. And it's very very attractive also. And people did practice it at some time in the past. But in modern world, all this is impractical. So there is no point in discussing all these things too much. So, but whatever it is, the important thing to remember is Pranavopasana is related to this. That is why Adhyalpam, Adhibhutam, Adhidevam, all these things have been spoken. Adhiyajnakathakotra dehesvin madasudana prayanagalejakadam yayosinevalpabhi Shri Bhagavanu Vaja Aksharam Brahma Paramam Svabhavodhyalpam Uchyate Bhutabhavodhavakaro Visargakarmasam Idam. Krishna is saying there, Aksharam Brahma Paramam Svabhavo Adhyatmam Uchyate, that the nature of Brahma or Krishna's impersonal side is such that Aksharam, it doesn't have any, it doesn't deteriorate, it is existing all the time. Because of Krishna's presence in this world alone, this whole world is functioning. Moment Krishna withdraws from here, everything is dead matter, it has no function at all. That anything, if you look in this world, you will find that everything has been created at some time or the other. And adibodham sharo bhava purushaschadi devadam adiyajnyohamevatra dehe dehavradam vara. Adibodham means what that will be, that will deteriorate at some point or the other. That is the nature of adibodham. And adibodham and jiva, or the living entity which is inside, which is a part of Krishna, a part and parcel of Krishna, is called adidevam. So jiva, Ishvara and Jagat, or the creation, the manifested form of Krishna, which is this universe, is the manifested form of Krishna. That is why it is called Jagat. It is a manifested form of Krishna. And jiva is Krishna's part and parcel which is functioning within this Jagat. And Ishvara is the supreme controller beyond the three modes of material nature. So, adhibhutam kshareo bhava purushaschadi devadam adiyajnyoham evatra dehe dehapradam varam. That adhibhutam is this material elements, this material world made of material elements. And jiva, or the living soul, is the adhidevam. And Krishna, the Ishvara, is the adhiyajnyam. So, that is how very simple terms these three words are discussed there, adhibhutam, adhidevam and adhiyajnyam. Andhakale jamame vasmaran muktva kaleveram yaprayadasamadbhavam yadinastyatra samshaya. Now, two of the most important verses in the Bhagavad Gita. These two verses, next two verses, gives us the understanding how important it is to die properly. People are thinking that if I get a good bed to lie and die in that, it is the best death. They say, oh, he slept in the death, they say. He died in the sleep, they say like that, isn't it? And we all think that that is the best death. But if you read the next two verses, it tells a different story. Krishna says, Andhakale jamame vasmaran muktva tektva kaleparam yaprayadi samadbhavam yadina astyatra samshayah. Krishna says, Andhakale jamame vam. If you think about me, Krishna says, at the time of death, smaran tektva kaleparam, and if you give up your body with that understanding, yaprayadi samadbhavam, you will take a form like me. You will come back to me. In other words, yadina astyatra samshayah. There is no doubt about it. Krishna says very categorically that, in other words, at the time of death, if you are able to think about Krishna and leave your body, Krishna says that you will come back to me. Krishna says you will come back to me. So when we hear this, it looks very simple, isn't it? Oh, all I have to do is, at the time of death, I just have to remember Krishna and I'm going back to the spiritual world. Why I have to go through all this chanting process, studying Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, getting up so early in the morning and whole day struggling in this world? I can't enjoy my senses, my body, nothing. I'm restricted everywhere. And the answer is very simple. Krishna puts it like this. That Krishna says that andhakale jamameva smaran tektva kaleparam yaprayadi samadbhavam yadina astyatra samshayah. No doubt, Krishna says. Such a guarantee Krishna has given there. And in the next verse, Krishna says also another thing. Yam yam vabhi smaran bhavam tejatyande kaleparam tandham hi vedikaundeya sadatad bhava bhavidah. Then at the time of death, yam yam vabhi smaran bhavam, at the time of death, whatever one thinks and gives up his body, tejatyande kaleparam tandham hi vedikaundeya sadatad bhava bhavidah, he will reach that stage or reach that body. Now, these verses to understand, we have to go into Srimad Bhagavatam a little bit more, because Bhagavatam explains all these things much more in detail so that we don't get any doubt about it, what Krishna said here. Normally we read everything and we take on the face value what Krishna says like that, isn't it? But sometimes these things, in order to understand the gravity or the value of these statements, Srimad Bhagavatam can help us a lot. Once it so happened that Uddhava asked Krishna, that Krishna, Uddhava was always mystified by this process called death. Always mystified by the process called death. We are also mystified, but at the same time, because we don't know anything what happens after death, and we don't know what's going to happen either, our mind don't think too far after death what happens, isn't it? We don't know anything about it. And because we think that no one has the answer, and we also don't have an answer, so we think, why worry about it? That's the modern approach. At least today, that is most of the people are thinking like that. That why worry about what happens after death? Sometimes big people, they make the statements like this. If you are thinking something after death, that means your mind is gone. They say like this, that you must be crazy. That's what they are thinking. That you're not thinking anything about this life. Rather, you are thinking something about... Often you find people like that, don't they? They do put questions to you like this. And you have to think also at that time, what state of consciousness this person is asking this question. Why worry after death? What happens? Isn't it? But if you study Srimad Bhagavatam, personalities like Uddhava, they were worried about it. They were worried in the sense, they had Krishna. Uddhava said that he was not worried. But he asked some question to Krishna to get some understanding from Krishna about it. Uddhava said to Krishna, Krishna, as far as birth is concerned, we have some experience and we are seeing it all the time. What's happening at the time of birth? The living entity, 10 months or so, has suffered enough inside the womb and one day thrown out from there. He comes to this world. He comes to this world, and after coming to this world, We have experienced 60, 70, 80 years in this world, different experiences we got, isn't it? And then when suddenly we leave the body and go, and Uddhava says to Krishna, my dear Krishna, you are a person who neither has no birth nor death, no beginning, no end for you. Whereas we who are changing the body all the time is always subjected to this thing called birth and death. And as far as birth is concerned, we still have some understanding about birth, that what happened, we have come from where we have come, we know, and how long we were there also we know, and what the experience was also we know. But some understanding we still have about birth. But as far as death is concerned, we have no idea what will happen after death. Uddhava said to Krishna like this. So Krishna smiled at Uddhava and said to Uddhava that this death is not a big thing, what people make about it. People talk big things about death. But in Krishna's words, mrityu atyanda vismrati. Mrityu is nothing but a complete forgetfulness of everything. Complete forgetfulness, that is what mrityu means. How do we understand that complete forgetfulness means? Let us explain it in this way. The easy way to understand is that if you look at our own mind and our way that we function, we have so many things in our memory, isn't it? In our mind, there are so many things we are remembering all the time. And sometimes some strong thought comes to the mind, immediately we forget many other things. Why? Because this has taken an important position in our mind. It has captured. Just to give an example, suppose you have to catch a train to go to London, and you are late for the work in the morning. You are running to the station to catch the train, and you are thinking all the time that I might miss the train. If I don't catch the 7:43, I won't get to King's Cross on time. So something like that, that thought has become stronger in your mind. And because of that fear that you may miss the train, all your mind was always telling you to be concerned about it and to get ready quickly and to leave home. So this thought has become so strongly in your mind. And you left home and you got to the station. When you got to the station, you wanted to buy the ticket. When you looked, you have forgotten to take the credit card or money or whatever it was. Why did this happen? Because the moment this thought of missing the train became strong in your mind, the thought regarding carrying the credit card was forgotten. This was the result of that. That is the power of the mind, how mind functions. If one particular thought becomes stronger and it becomes takes over, then the rest of the things are not able to simultaneously function at the same time. That depends on the intensity of thought, what happens. Krishna says, death is like that. Mrityu atyanda vismrati. Atyanda vismrati is like this death. Why? Because in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are two stories to illustrate this. To illustrate this point, how it happened. Bharata Maharaj, King Bharata, who was the Emperor Bharat, and this Emperor Bharat, he left everything, left home, went to the forest and wanted to give up his body in the forest. He was getting prepared himself to go to the spiritual world. A great personality he was, that he was performing austerities and penances in the forest. This was happening in Nepal, near the banks of the river, Gandaki River. That is where he performed this austerity. So when he was performing austerities, every day he used to stand in the water and perform his Sandhya Vandanam or the Upasana at three different times during the day. Looking at the sun god, he used to offer the water, ablutions to the sun god. So he made a lot of progress in his sannyasa ashram. He was a sannyasi, he has given up everything and came to the forest. All the kingdom was given up, the family life was given up, everything has been given up. And he was completely absorbed in the service of the Supreme Lord in this Gandaki River. He was living on the banks of the river. In spite of all this concentration of his mind and his commitment to spiritual life, while once, while offering ablutions of water to the deity in the sun planet, suddenly he saw in the forest a sound coming from behind. And when he looked, he found that a tiger was chasing a pregnant deer. The deer was running and the tiger was chasing. And where he sat and he was performing his meditation, a little on the upstream side, the river has taken two branches and it was coming on either side of Bharat Maharaj. Bharat Maharaj is sitting there. The river was coming from the front, upstream side, and it has taken two branches, one on either side it was coming through. So he has selected the best place. On either side the river was flowing, and the pure area where he used to sit and perform his meditation. So it was on the upstream side this incident happened, that the deer was running, chased by this tiger, and the deer was pregnant as well. Unfortunately, at the time when the tiger tried to catch the deer jumped over the water to the other side. She was pregnant and she was in her ready for delivery as far as the time was concerned. So unfortunately, because of the fear what she had, of the fear of the deer, fear of the tiger, she delivered the baby in the water. And the deer escaped to the other side and ran away. Didn't wait further, ran away from there. Tiger didn't chase and went back from there. This baby which fell into the water, it started flowing through the stream. And our Bharat Maharaj has moved into the right side stream where he was offering the ablutions. So when this baby deer was coming through the water, he saw that baby deer coming through the water, and Bharat Maharaj, who has given up everything at home, the emperor, the kingdom, everything, suddenly saw this baby deer and thought, is it not my responsibility to save this deer? Thought came up to him. Because of the satugunam inside, you see how the three modes of material nature traps you. You have come to the mood of goodness, and that very mood of goodness has taken you out of spiritual life at the time when you badly needed it. He could not resist himself. He thought, after all, this living entity is a fresh birth for the baby deer, number one. Secondly, why did that come through this stream rather than going through the other stream? Because it has come through this stream, it means that it was meant to be protected by me, is it not? He started thinking like this. Thinking all that, what did he do? He stopped all his other spiritual activities, picked up this baby deer, and started looking at it. When he looked at it, the beautiful throat of the deer and all the spots on that, the nice ears what this deer had, and its very painful look what it was presenting, looking for some compassion from Bharat Maharaj. Bharat Maharaj fell in love with that deer. And for the moment he thought, spiritual life can wait. I'm not in a rush. For my duty right now is to look after this deer, he thought. So he stopped all the activities. First thing he did was, now the mother has gone, the deer needs milk. So he carried the deer and went to the village, nearest village, walked a lot of distance to get some milk for the deer. He got some milk for the deer and brought it and fed the deer. And then he thought that if I don't look after, he's very young, feeding 1 or 2 days is not enough. I have to find some group of deer, wherever they are there, and take them there so they may be able to help this newborn one to grow. So he took them to the deer, and he also made sure that the deer is getting enough nourishment every day. So every day, Bharat Maharaj will go to the village, bring milk, and hand it over to the, and feed the deer. Little by little, this attachment got built up. He has given up all the attachment at home, the family, the kingdom, everything, and come to the forest and got attached to this deer. So what happens is, he got attached to the deer, and deer was growing up, and the emperor was feeling extreme bliss in seeing that deer growing up. that he was able to help the deer. And as and when it was growing up in that youthful stage, the deer looked so attractive that all the time our Emperor Bharat was thinking about this deer. So in that process, at the end, what happened was, time has come to go from this world. The time was due. Nobody is going to wait. Whether you look after deer or a cow or an elephant or BMW, it doesn't matter. Whatever you are driving, it is not going to wait for you. The time has come for Bharat Maharaj to go. So, when the time came, that Bharat Maharaj was, normally all these austerities and penances were performed to think about Krishna at the time of death. But unfortunately, for Bharat Maharaj, the thought started coming about this deer. So, Shastras are saying that at the time of death, what happens is, whomever you have loved too much, or whomever you have hated too much in this world, they will take a form and come in front of you at the time of death. Whatever form you have loved too much, or whatever form you have hated too much. So, our Bharat Maharaj has got so attracted to this form of the deer. So he is lying down and he is leaving his body. And what is he seeing? He is seeing this form of beautiful form of the deer in front of him. Because of the strong attachment he has built up for this deer. Now what is happening is, what happens inside is that his mind is slowly getting more and more focused on this particular form of the deer. Normally, at the generally it is like this. Our mind goes into some form, absorbs that form, and then when we want it, we can pull the mind back from that form, isn't it? We can pull back our form, our mind from that form. But at the time of death, what Krishna says is that a stage will come when this particular form has manifested in front of you, and when it has manifested, you start thinking about it. And not only you start thinking about it, that form is present in front of you so strongly that you are trying to pull back your mind from that form. That your mind has gone into that form of the deer, and you are trying to pull it back from the deer. But at some point, you will not be able to do it. That's what happens. You won't be able to pull your mind back from that form. And that is the thing called death. Krishna says this, Mrityu Atyanda Vismriti, that you have lost. A stage can happen that you will never be able to come back to your original identity. Up to that point, Bharat Maharaj was thinking, I am Emperor Bharat, I am a sannyasi, I am performing austerities and penances, this, that and the other. All the identities in relationship with that particular body, he was thinking about it. But what happened is that at this particular point, his consciousness has completely left from this body and moved on to the next body of the deer. He was trying hard to pull it back into the original, but he could not do it. And that is what happens at the time of death. Whomever you have loved so much, or whomever you have hated too much, that forms will manifest in front of the person at the time of death. This is what the Shastra is saying. I don't know what the medicine says, modern medicine, but Shastra says this, that this is what happens at the time of death. Srimad Bhagavatam is illustrating this, that you have to get your death correct, how to get your death right, how to prepare for death. This is what Bhagavatam is talking about. And this two verses in the Bhagavad Gita is also telling us the same thing. Yam yam va vismaran bhavam tejatyande kalevaram tantam he vaidikaundeya sada tad bhava bhavidah. That whatever form you have, if you have to remember the deer, why Maharaj, Bharat Maharaj got attached to deer? So that attachment has manifested in the form of deer in front of him. If you get attached to Krishna, what happens? Krishna will come in the front at the time when you leave the body. This is all. The principle is very simple. But just like Bharat Maharaj got attached to the deer, we have to get attached to Krishna. Otherwise it is not going to happen. If we simply think at the time of death I will remember Krishna, it won't happen. It will not happen. And because for that to happen, Krishna has to come automatically without we asking for it. That is how it happened in Bharat Maharaj. Bharat Maharaj was not asking for the deer to manifest. Why? Because the attachment was so strong inside for the deer. The deer came automatically without being invited, isn't it? So similarly, if our attachment for Krishna is so strong, then you don't have to invite Krishna. Krishna will be there automatically. So that is the stage when one can go back to the spiritual world. Otherwise, if you simply think that, oh, I've been chanting 16 rounds, I'll go back home, back to Godhead. Krishna is not saying that there. Krishna is saying, andakale jamameva smaran tyaktva kaleparam ya prayadi samadbhavam yadi nastyatra samshayaha yamyam vabismaran bhavam tyajatyande kaleparam samdhamme vedi kaundeya sadadadbhava bhavidaha. So, tadadadbhava bhavidaha. Krishna says, if you are able to remember me at the time of death, somehow or the other, practice for whole life, Krishna says, do that. Practice this process of Krishna consciousness, whole life. Why do we chant Hare Krishna? So that attachment builds up inside. Somehow or the other, it doesn't matter. Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and chanting the holy name, the best process to remember Krishna. And somehow or the other, if the attachment increases, you can get your death proper, the death correct. Otherwise, whatever the next body, whatever form that has come in front of us, whether it is cat's body or the dog which I loved all my life, or the something else, whatever that is, that body Krishna prepares and hands over to us. Tam sada evedi kaundeya sada tadbhava bhavidaha. That tadbhava bhavidam, we have to accept that bhavam, whatever that has come. So from this experiment you can see that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in order to explain this later, Krishna talks about the story of a great personality. While studying at school, Krishna noticed this and kept it in his mind, and he put this in the form of, I think it is the 23rd chapter in the 11th canto known as Bhikshugita. In Bhikshugita, there is only one topic that is discussed. Prepare your death properly. Prepare for your death properly. Because in this world, if you really look at it, we deal with three kinds of people, isn't it? One is your friends, some people who are your friends, some people who are your enemies. Mostly that is more than the friends. Then the third one, there is what is known as Udasinan. Shatru, Mitram and Udasinan. Udasinan means they are neither friends nor enemical. We just see them here and there now and then. They don't give you any trouble, we don't give them any trouble. So they are not very troublesome. But the other two, Shatru and Mitram, they are both troublesome. They can be, you may be thinking, oh, all my friends will come and see me at the time of death. That's not a very good thing, according to Bhagavatam. Because these so-called friends, they will only engage you. Have you made the will? And how much have you kept for me in your will? This is what the friends wants to know. And the enemies will say, oh, let him die and go from this world, finish with this world. So neither these friends nor the enemy, they cannot help you at the time of death. They are both dangerous people. Both the friends as well as the enemies. So therefore it says there, in the Bhikshugita it clearly says this, that out of the Shatru, Mitram and Udasinan, that means friends, enemies and the indifferent ones don't cause much of a damage. But Shatru and Mitram, you have to keep all of them away from you and get your mind attached to Krishna. And that is the only way you can get your death proper, the dying properly from this world and go back home, back to Krishna. Otherwise, it is not come back again and accept another gross body. So this is that process. So these two verses in the Bhagavad Gita is elaborately explained in the Bhagavatam so that we don't have to have any further doubt about it. Here we doubt everything. When Krishna says something in the Bhagavad Gita, we start thinking, how does that happen? The science says something else, we say. Or somebody else says something else. But all these kind of arguments we put forward. But in the Srimad Bhagavatam, so that we understand it, and that Bhikshugita, if you study that Prakaranam means that episode in the Bhagavatam, it will give us a proper understanding that how that particular Bhikshu or the sage managed to get his death right. How he managed to do that by doing or keeping all these three things away from his mind and bringing Krishna there in spite of that, all the other things. So, I'll stop there today. Now, one thing, that with today I'm stopping Bhagavad Gita for a few months, and I go to India. When I come back, hopefully we can continue from there. And tomorrow the same thing with Srimad Bhagavatam also. I'll finish 10th canto tomorrow,
And then we will continue with Bhagavatam when I come back. My humble obeisances to all of you. Hare Krishna. All glory to Srila Prabhupada.